for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The HIRE Act, which the president signs today, includes tax incentives for businesses to hire workers who've been unemployed for over 60 days. Some of the jobless have been going back to school after hearing that to get work, they need to obtain new career skills. But for many, that still has not resulted in a job. Joining us here in the studio, Robert Lerman of the Urban Institute and Dante Chinney of the Christian Science Monitor. New York Times correspondent Peter Goodman joins us from a studio at Stanford University. Wall Street Journal correspondent Justin Leihart joins us from NPR's New York Bureau. You can join us as well, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook. Send us a tweet, or do check out our new homepage, our new webpage at drshow.org. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Justin Leihart, let me start with you. You had a story about a town in New Jersey. Talk about the situation there.
Well, I checked out what was happening in southeastern New Jersey. That's the area around Atlantic City where the casinos are really suffering. They've also had problems with their housing market. And finally, they have had problems with their hospitality industry. So those are really some of the three main sources of employment in that area. And they're all getting hit at once. And that creates a very tough situation for workers, especially when you talk about retraining, because there's just not a lot of jobs there to be had.
Are you talking about both blue-collar and white-collar jobs?
Yeah, in that area, it seems that it is both blue-collar and white-collar. And we know that's happening nationally, that this has been such a severe recession that it's hit multiple industries, multiple occupations, and, you know, blue-collar and white-collar alike.
And what about long-term versus short-term?
Well, we do know that long-term unemployment has just skyrocketed during this recession. About 40% of the people who are unemployed have been unemployed for 6 months or more. And that's just stark compared to what we've seen in any previous downturn.
So what did you actually hear when you started talking to people who are trying to get new jobs?
Well, I think that a lot of the people who are getting retrained, they're very hopeful. They're also going into this situation, into retraining with open eyes. They recognize that it's a very, very tough employment market, and they understand that they may not get a job right away. They're very hopeful that they will, but they understand that you may not. I mean, I'm not sure if that's true of everyone who's getting retrained, but that's certainly of the people that I chatted with. And they're just building skills for when the jobs do come back.
And were these people mostly in their 40s and 50s or younger, older, what?
I talked to a lot of people who were in their late 40s and in their early 50s, a lot of people who had actually been at the same job for 20, 30 years. I mean, that's another feature of this downturn is that we've seen people who have been, you know, long-term workers, been through their industries ups and downs before and always hung on, you know, really probably, you know, some of the stellar employees, but once the company goes away, you know, that's it. There's no job there.
Justin Leihart, he's correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Turning to you now, Robert Lerman. The Labor Department says there's something like one job opening for every five-plus people seeking a job.
Yeah, well, this is obviously one of our worst downturns. I do want to say that one thing that's often ignored is that there's also a lot of hiring. The labor market churns a lot. So you see a lot of hiring taking place along with a lot of separations.
Where is that?
Well, in every state and in most industries, it's simply that it doesn't make it that good because, it doesn't improve the overall job outlook because when you have hiring but the separations are greater, there's still job loss. So somebody's losing a job and somebody's getting a job.
So who's getting hired? Older people, younger people, people in the middle? Who's getting hired?
Well, younger people more because they are just starting out and they don't have jobs. The older people often do have jobs. And so, but all across the board, there's hiring. I don't want to put such a positive light on it. When we have negative job growth, we have negative job growth. When we have, like you say, five unemployed for one opening, we do have that. It's just that for any unemployed person, you can't, that it's not as if there's no hiring taking place. There is a lot of hiring taking place, but there's also a lot of separations.
Robert Lerman, he's professor of economics at American University and a fellow at the Urban Institute. Turning to you, Peter Goodman, what do you see as particularly hopeful in this new jobs bill that the president's going to sign today?
Well, most of the economists that I talk to think that we could see somewhere around 200,000 jobs created by dint of these tax incentives. And, that's certainly not nothing. But we have to remember the big picture. There are 15 million people who are officially unemployed in the United States today. That doesn't count the millions more who have given up looking for work because they're discouraged. They've decided that there just aren't jobs out there for them. It doesn't count the millions of people who have seen their hours cut in this recession or who are working in part-time jobs because they can't find a full-time job. And getting back to the point Justin made earlier, 40% of those people, which is to say more than 6 million, have been out of work for 6 months or longer. Now, most economists think we need somewhere above 100,000 jobs created a month net just to absorb new entrants to the workforce. So now we have a bill that might create a couple hundred thousand, maybe 300,000 if we're lucky. That's helpful, but that's a pretty small impact in the midst of a very, very stark landscape of unemployment.
So where do you see these jobs going? Are we talking about roads, bridges, that kind of thing?
Well, some of that, because money's now being transferred into infrastructure building. There's going to be more road building now, more mass transit. That should create jobs for construction workers and associated industries. But there's a thinking that a lot of the tax incentives will get absorbed by the sorts of industries that tend to lose a lot of people and replace a lot of people in the course of a year. Take the restaurant industry, for instance. And if that happens, then essentially we're going to give tax breaks to companies that would be probably hiring these workers anyhow.
Peter Goodman of the New York Times. He's author of the book titled Past Due, The End of Easy Money, The Renewal of the American Economy. And turning to you, Dante Cheney, what have you heard from people in some of the areas you've been going to?
The thing that's most disconcerting to me when I go to these places and talk to these people is in some of the places I go, I don't see the engine to turn things around. Some of these communities have been built on construction. You go to these ex-urban places that we call boom towns, and they're far removed or somewhat far removed from industrial areas. And who moved there? The people who wanted more home. And they were willing to probably stretch a little bit and have to drive a little further to get the place they wanted when times were good. Now they've got their place. Maybe they don't have their job anymore. They'd like to sell. They don't have anybody to sell to. Their house isn't worth as much as it were. I mean, the thing that's that concerns me a lot when I look at everything is I don't see, you know, there is less ability for there to be mobility right now. People are locked into their homes, their houses, they're underwater, they can't sell. People are going to have to move. I think that, you know, when you talk about the kinds of people who have been laid off, people who have jobs for 20, 30 years, you know, that's more than just a recession. I think that a lot of people think it's a big restructuring. And if it is a big restructuring, even if we are doing retraining, which I don't think is a bad idea, what do you retrain them for? That's the question right now. And that doesn't mean that you don't do retraining, but it does mean that you've got to understand you're going to try some things. Some things are going to work. Some things are not.
And are some of the people you're talking to undergoing that kind of training?
I mean, some are. Some are young enough where they can happen into something. I mean, I talked to a guy who ran a lumberyard out in Eagle, Colorado, and it just disappeared. The housing market just disappeared overnight there. You know, half that town is for sale now, essentially, or at least 40% of it. And he just went to Orkin and got a job with Orkin. And so he's doing pest control. And he doesn't mind it. He says, you know, it actually pays well. The benefits aren't that bad. It's definitely not as glamorous, and there's no upside. He's not going to get rich. But he's just thankful he has what he has. And the friends he had that did work in construction and worked alongside him in the lumberyard, they have no place to go.
But do they expect the construction building era to come back?
It's really hard to see it out there. I mean, there's not a lot to push it forward. And remember, we have a lot of housing stock to eat through still. We have a lot of foreclosures to eat through. We're going to have more foreclosures this year than we had last year. Construction is something that usually pulls us out of recessions. It's hard to see it coming back.
Dante Cheney, he's director of the Christian Science Monitor's Patchwork Nation blog. And I want to hear from you. Many of you I know are out of work. Call us. And here's our first email. As we talk about the unemployment situation, the jobs bill the president is signing today, which offers tax credits to employers who hire individuals who've been out of work 60 days or more. Here's an email from Mary, who's listening on WUOM in Farmington Hills, Michigan. She says, does the jobs bill require employers to not consider your credit score in making a hiring decision? My brother filed bankruptcy. He's worried about the effect of that on his employability. Justin Leihart at the Wall Street Journal, what do you think?
I don't know the details of the bill, whether it gets down that deep. But, you know, we do know that there has been this situation where, you know, people are getting their credit score checked. And it's, you know, it's a tough situation.
And here's another. This, I think, probably represents a lot of people. It's from Frank in Texas, who says, I was laid off 2 months ago after passing tests with high marks for re-education. I was told I was too skilled and educated to gain money for re-education in another field. I need 24 hours to finish my BA so I can at least teach. But I figured with a re-education program, I could get into a PC tech or web development job. The system is broken, he says, Dante.
He has very interesting points to make. I would say that when you look at like the PC tech field or web design, there's actually even a question, and I know those were jobs at one time that people wanted because they offered some good money quickly. I think actually a lot of those jobs even have dried up. That doesn't help him in his situation. But you have to find a way to get somebody at least the BA they need because, you know, at least teaching. That's not a bad thing to follow.
And here's another from John who says, I can't help but wonder how many jobs providing health care to 46 million Americans who currently don't have it would provide. It seems to me the health care bill is also a job creation bill. Peter Goodman.
Well, that sort of cuts both ways. I mean, one of the driving forces in the health care debate, regardless of how we may feel about the particulars of the bills on the table, is, you know, we're supposed to be spending less money as a nation on health care. We're spending such a huge percentage of our economy on health care with, according to many experts, unsatisfactory outcomes. So we're trying to cut the dollars going into health care. That said, health care is one of the few areas of this economy that's been growing consistently, that's been adding jobs throughout the recession, and that is a place of potential promise if we look to retraining. It's a place where there does seem to be a mismatch between the skills available and the people who are out of work.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. When you look at I forget the number now, but there has been when you have the kind of recession we've had right now, you have people running to the lifeboats, and that is a lifeboat that a lot of people have run to, getting retrained to do something in healthcare, med tech, something like that.
And here's a question for you, Robert Lerman, from Jim in Indianapolis, who says, what jobs are people retraining for? Here in Indiana, you can get a lot of retraining, but there's next to no counseling as to what job people should retrain for. It's basically a crapshoot. Choose a job and pray that those jobs will actually be there when you're through spending the money for training.
Yes, well, this is a chronic problem with our system because it's so school-based. It's so based on getting some sort of degree through a post-secondary education program, as opposed to what many other countries do, which is utilize the apprenticeship system, whereby employers sponsor the training and people get the training in the context of real work. They learn mastery of certain skills at the workplace, and the employers watch them as they learn, and those that do well get real jobs. And therefore, I think what we really need to do is expand the nation's apprenticeship system, and that would reduce dramatically the mismatch between education and the training.
And
side.
What do you mean by apprenticeship? Do you mean volunteer work, working simply beside someone?
We have actually an apprenticeship system with nearly 500,000 registered apprentices. They are involved in 3 to 4 year programs where they're learning skills, earning money, taking classes in the evening and on weekends to achieve a very well-structured set of skills that are laid out through the Labor Department's
in
program.
In what areas?
All kinds of areas. Construction is the biggest, so that would be way down. But there's police and fire, there's health care. I'm actually looking at a new apprenticeship approach in long-term care workers. And so there's manufacturing still requires some as well.
All right. And joining us now, Jean McAllister. She is Associate Dean of Continuing Education at Atlantic Cape Community College in New Jersey. Good morning to you, Jean.
Good morning.
And Catherine Knopp. She's Director of Workforce Development at Clackamas Community College. That's in a suburb of Portland, Oregon. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning.
Catherine, let me start with you and ask, what kinds of training are you seeing people going after to try to get into the workforce or back into the workforce?
We're covering many sectors. What we do is tell people that we're retraining them so that when the jobs are back, they have more skills. This is the time while they are out of work to enhance their skills. We are training people in healthcare, manufacturing, such as CNC operation and welding. We're going to be beginning wind turbine repair training. We are looking at all the renewable energy technology areas, such as solar. We are training people in transportation and logistics.
And how many of the people who have undergone this kind of training have a realistic possibility or prospect of a job?
Oh, I think they all do. You know, we're still kind of in a shifting pattern, like Robert mentioned, that we're seeing an upheaval. Some people are getting jobs while we are still seeing big layoffs. So it feels like a shifting in the whole culture. The pay rates are changing also. People are looking at not making as much as they ever, you know, made in the past.
Or imagined they might make.
Right.
And Jean McAllister, what about you? What are the ages of the people you are seeing in the Atlantic Cape Community College?
Well, we are serving a variety of ages, from the out-of-school youth to seniors. And what we've noticed recently is, over the last couple of years, since 2008, a steady incline in the number of folks ages 50 and above.
Now, is that because they're looking for work, or are they simply there to educate themselves?
No, they are looking for work. These are folks who have been working for a company for 20, 30 years, who lack the skills for the new jobs, who lack office skills, who lack, you know, just the skills just to make it, to have a competitive edge when they're applying for new jobs.
Now, when you say office skills, are you talking about computer skills?
Correct. You have folks who have been working in one office using a proprietary software for that specific company. So when they try to go find another office job, they don't have the Microsoft Office skills. They don't have Word, Excel, you know, access. They don't have the skills that they need to be successful. That's just one group of people. And what we're finding is they're deciding this is the time to try something new.
Hmm.
And healthcare is popular.
Healthcare in what sense? Long-term care?
Well, the CNA, the Certified Nursing Assistant, is probably a job that is always available because there's a high turnover rate and has the highest success rate in employment. So if we have 10 people in a class, we can bet that those 10 will all have a job. But the medical office technology, medical assistance, surgical tech, patient care are all those that folks may be retrained for. And they all have internships. So you talk about apprenticeships, but we do have internships attached to just about all of these programs so that folks can put it on their resume that they actually have a new skill, but also are able to apply it to an employer and also hopefully will get a job, if not there, or a letter of recommendation for their next job.
Catherine, someone earlier asked about counseling. So to what extent are the students who come to you being counseled on what areas they ought to be thinking about before they go into classrooms?
Well, we make sure that, you know, we have, this is an interesting question, because when you have a bricklayer who comes to you and says, I would like to be a patient care specialist, you ask questions about whether or not to see if they're compassionate, to see if they would really be someone who would to fit into the healthcare role before you, you know, even take them into your program. If you feel it's not a right fit after you go through an extensive interviewing process, then we recommend another, you know, another career. We do not like to put anybody in a career that there isn't a fit, so to speak. A woman recently who had a, who was in the furniture sales business, bilingual, she had enough. She was in the, you know, she was laid off twice after the furniture stores were closing in our region, seemingly one after another. And she finally got into an office technology class so that she could update her skills and work in an office environment. And she's over 45, and she really wanted to try something new and was crying because she was so happy that she was able to finally go through the one-stop system, which is a challenge, but also to pass the adult basic test scores that are needed to get into the program and then get into the training. It's a full-time job to be in training.
And final question for you, Jean McAllister. Are your doors bursting with applicants at this point?
We are seeing higher demand than in the past couple of years. We are experiencing, as I mentioned before, between 2008 and 2010, we had a 76% increase.
Wow.
50 and above. But we've also had a steady increase of 35% in overall continuing education courses. So it's it's growing.
Well, Catherine Knopp and Jean McAllister, I want to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Gainesville, Texas. Good morning, Jay. You're on the air.
Diane, most of the discussion so far has been about older people looking for new jobs. But, of course, there's enormous unemployment of young people. And one of the great job opportunities comes from summer employment. I'm a lawyer, and in our profession, we hire law students during the summer, and virtually all new hires come from those students who we've worked with for a month or so during the summer. Lots of other businesses operate in the same way. And I think it would be extremely helpful, too, for the federal government to provide some kind of support to encourage summer employment and help pay the cost of it.
Dante Cheney.
I like the idea. Yeah, I like the idea of helping summer employment as kind of a door into another job. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of interest in doing it for people in who have law degrees is the one thing I'd say. But there are other things because they have a certain they have a certain amount of skills to begin with. But I think that, I think definitely for some people who don't have those set of skills, it's a good door into some place.
Exactly. Let's go to High Point, North Carolina. Good morning, Madison.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
Well, I'm actually a nursing student who recently left law school. I spent a year in law school, and when the summer months came around, I came out of my studying cocoon and realized what was going on in the world. And both of my parents supported my decision to leave law school just because it wasn't a good financial investment. I have friends who have very expensive law degrees at 8.5% interest rates who have been unemployed for a year or two and are profoundly depressed and don't have another recourse.
Hmm. So you probably perceive that you're going to have far more opportunities in the healthcare area than perhaps you might have graduating from law school.
Yes, ma'am. And in fact, I moved home to assist with my elderly grandparents, and I've acted as a CNA for them unofficially.
Wow.
It's been a wonderful experience just living with family and redirecting my life into a different career.
Justin Layhart, what about the choice between health career and law?
Well, I think, you know, for sure we are seeing this growth in healthcare. And we know that, you know, for nurses in particular, are in very, very high demand. You know, I guess that, you know, that's a decision that someone would make, law, healthcare. I have to think that, you know, ultimately, you know, either would be a path to a job. There is a question about some of these other skill sets that people are trying to get into, you know, sort of culinary, that kind of thing.
All right.
Where the jobs are limited.
We'll take just a short break here. When we come back, more of your calls. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org, and by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR.
The tale of a wimpy kid from the Bronx who became one of the 20th century's most famous voices of satire and dissent. Playwright, author, and Village Voice cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer on finding his life's work. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And here's an email that apparently typifies what many people are experiencing. It's from Paul in Orange Park, Florida, who's listening on WJCT. He says, I've been unemployed since June 30, 2008, when AT&T bought Bell South. I've gone back to college. I'm on track to graduate in May 2011, at which time I will be 61 years old. I don't know what kind of a job I'll be able to get, but believe that a college will give me an advantage in obtaining work. Do you agree, Robert Lerman?
Yes, I do. One interesting thing that's happened is that older workers, people 60 and above, they have now actually, there's been an increase in employment even over this period. There's an increase in the unemployment rate because people are coming into the workforce. But older workers have actually had a rise in their total employment. Well, maybe some are more flexible. They're taking part-time jobs. Some are just staying longer on their existing job. So it's a striking phenomenon. Part of it is that people feel that their retirement income might not be what it
is,
so they are delaying retirement considerably longer. But it's still striking that the actual employment levels of people over 60 is higher than it was.
Now, on the other hand, here's an email from Stan in Fishers, Indiana, who says, I applied for a teaching job at a university in Ohio, was told during my interview that the ideal candidate would be someone in their 30s. I am 58 years old and make no secret about my age. Why do employers do this? Peter Goodman.
Well, I want to get back to what Robert just said. Yeah, it's true that the employment rate as a percentage of population amongst older workers is up. It's also true that older workers have seen their rates of long-term unemployment skyrocket. So an awful lot of older workers have been sidelined. At this point, employers can be very selective about who they choose. There's a sense that the longer you've been out of work, the more your skills have atrophied. There's a loss of confidence. The longer you're out of work, the harder it is to even come up with, you know, bus fare or gas money to put in the car to drive to a job interview, or to pay for your dry cleaning to look presentable at an interview when you know the odds are against you and you're going to have to figure out a way to pay your bills in the interim, and you're seeing your savings decline. So it can be very, very hard for older workers, particularly those who are less skilled at computer tasks and other parts of the modern economy.
And here's a caller in Charlottesville, Virginia. Sean, good morning to you.
Hi, Diane. I'm a land survey technician. I'm 54 years old. I've been doing this kind of work for over 20 years, and I've been unemployed since last May. My problem is I've been trying to find sources of funding for retraining, and because of my age, I'm unwilling to take on any new debt. I'm out of debt right now and basically living on savings, but for somebody with a bachelor's degree already, it is nearly impossible to uncover any sources of training money. And I was wondering if anybody on the panel has any clue about where to fund needed retraining for people my age.
Now, what about the president's bill? Is that going to provide any funding for retraining, Dante?
I don't believe so, actually. That's a good question for the other panelists, but I thought that was pretty much a straight incentive to hire.
For the employers.
Right, yeah.
All right.
Well, the stimulus program did increase the Workforce Investment Act dollars by a considerable amount. But for serious training, there is an income threshold that you have to be below to get that kind of training through the Workforce Investment Act. Depending on how low income has gone, you might be eligible for Workforce Investment Act training dollars.
Sean, what about that?
Okay, I haven't run into that. And who is that administered?
Well, there are one-stop centers in each area. They're called different things in different states.
I did apply for that, but that was 6 months ago, and I haven't heard back on it. So
I think in this kind of market, what you have to do is to be persistent. Go after and after and after it again, and don't give up. I think that is so often the inclination. You get so discouraged, you do give up. So, Sean, I'm wishing you all kinds of success, but keep looking. Let's go now to Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Good morning, Jacob. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you. I just had a comment to make. I'm 24 years old, and I graduated in 2008 from Franklin Pierce University in New Hampshire. And I live in Rhode Island now, and we're one of the worst for unemployment in the country. And I was able to find work with health care 2 months after school.
What kind of a job?
I'm a scientific glassblower. So I actually went to school with a bachelor in arts, and people would, you know, you wouldn't think that I'd be able to find something even with my profession, but I was able to do so.
Well, congratulations, Dante.
Yeah, they were probably mocking you when you were in school, yeah. and you get the last laugh.
There he is. All right, let's go to Nathan County, West Virginia. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm not a representative by any means of the Census Department. I'm just a worker. An observation that here, at least, we almost have to hire 30 people to get 10 that are willing to work. And I find this kind of, right now you would think they would be lining up to go to work for the census, take the test, and go to work and do well and earn a few bucks, and it is not happening. And I'd like your people on your panel just to comment on that.
So what's going on, Peter Goodman?
Well, I actually talked to some people at a one-stop center in Orange County about this a few weeks ago, and they said, you know, we're sick of hearing that the census is supposed to fix all of our problems. These were people who had been out of work between 6 months and 2 years. I mean, they would happily take jobs at the census, and some of them actually have worked temporary stints. But they say what often happens is there's a great deal of disorganization. They go in, they get a couple days of training, they get a couple days of work, then they don't know when they're going to work again. And then it makes it difficult to take interviews for full-time jobs because they never seem to know from 1 week to the next whether they're going to get a full 40 hours, whether they'll get a fraction of that. And so there's a feeling out there amongst the long-term unemployed that you don't say no to the census if that's all you've got, but it potentially puts you in a position where it stops you from getting a real job and it doesn't pay enough.
Robert Lertman, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think that many employers still do have problems with sifting through workers who lack the soft skills, they lack the communication skills, they might not pass a drug test. And you hear a lot of employers make this complaint. This doesn't mean in the least that we don't have a hugely serious employment problem. And as one panelist said earlier, people can afford to be picky in this particular economy. But it isn't all one way.
Dante.
I have interesting one place that I talked to. I have these people down, and they own a restaurant down in far reaches of the further reaches of Maricopa County outside of Phoenix. And what I always hear from her, and she's a staunch Republican, and is they can't keep employees. It's like, we can't keep busboys. We can't keep dishwashers. I don't know what people are talking about, recession. People should be taking any job they can get. You know, now, I don't think those jobs pay real well. And I think that there still is a
lot
of...
But they pay something.
They pay something.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because... And I don't know how to respond to her. It's interesting to me that when she comes to me with that, because the unemployment rate down there in Maricopa, you get down by Phoenix, they've been decimated by foreclosures.
And Justin Lehart, what about the enforced move that some families, people have to undergo in order to find work when they can't find it in their own residential area? How often does that happen?
Well, I mean, right now we have a couple of problems with the mobility of the labor force. I mean, the first thing is, you know, there are a lot of people who are underwater in their home. There are a lot of people who have lost their job when they're older, when they have kids, and family in the area, when they're really sort of have put down roots. That makes it very difficult to move. Then we have another problem, which is that unemployment is really, really high all over the country. And the places where it's not so high are places where people don't want to pick up, move root, you know, put down new roots and stay for a long time. So, you know, both of those things are hurting the mobility of workers. And the mobility of American workers is one thing that's, you know, really unique about the United States and one thing that makes our labor market, you know, much more dynamic than, say, in Europe.
And the other thing that's interesting is the places that are very hard hit now. I grew up outside Detroit. That's been decimated. So, but there are jobs here in Washington. There are government jobs. But, you know, moving from Detroit to Washington, that's a big change what you can possibly afford moving from one place to another.
And cost of living, compared to Washington.
Absolutely. It's a completely different world. So if you sell your home there for a change and then you come here, what are you going to be able to get for that?
It's tough.
Yes.
And the other thing about the Detroit market, auto workers used to always go to, you lose your job, you would go to a Sunbelt state.
Right.
And that would, you'd have this population growth and it would fuel a construction boom. And, that was a really good source of jobs. That's just not going to happen now.
No.
Let's go to Michael in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. I would just like to offer a suggestion for the fellow that called from Charlottesville, Virginia, that he check into getting a Pell Grant. I don't know if that was mentioned after he called, but having a degree is not going to disqualify him, I don't believe. So you might want to look into that, and the website is either FAFSA, FAFSA.org, or .gov. I'm not sure on that, but definitely check that out, because he might qualify for a Pell Grant, which he doesn't have to pay back.
Michael, that's so kind of you to call. I appreciate that suggestion. And let's go to Dallas, Texas. Tim, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I am a registered nurse. I went back to school at 34. I'm 42 now. Gosh, I've lost count. However, all of the information that's coming across about nursing is absolutely true. I got my degree at a two-year institution, and I was pretty much guaranteed a $50,000 a year job as soon as I graduated, and I got it. However, the thing I have not heard about regarding healthcare, particularly with the nursing degrees or the other specializations like ultrasound and radiology, is that it's ridiculously competitive. For example, at my two-year college, they start a class with 50. There were over 600 applicants for the 50 spots that I got.
Wow.
And we graduated 14 out of that 50. And within that time, it was very, very common to have 60-hour weeks. I averaged 3 hours of sleep a night and worked on the weekend with a couple of kids. So it is not easy. That being said, there was a woman who graduated in my class that was able to do all of this, and she was literally homeless for a third of the time.
My God.
And so just know that on the one hand, it is ridiculously hard to get into these programs and then to make it through, but there's always someone who's going to have it harder than you.
Tim, congratulations to you, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. You wanted to add to that, Bob Lehrman.
Well, yes. There's been a chronic problem of adding faculty and nursing programs. And one of the reasons is that the nurses who might be faculty members are already making a considerable amount of money. And the universities don't want to have or can't have differential pay for the instructors that are most in demand. And one result of that is that despite the fact that nursing is in big demand, you still have this problem of the scale of the programs. And again, I think if we combine that with apprenticeship, I think we could make a much bigger difference.
All right, Dan, one last quick call from Audrey here in Washington, D.C. You're on the air.
Thanks, Diane. I'm with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, so I had a quick comment and a question for your panel.
Sure.
Rubric of discrimination through which we look at these issues. The HIRE Act does not address the systemic barriers that face some of the jobless right now, such as the misuse of criminal and credit checks as a screening device, which impacts workers of color at a greater rate than white workers. And black college graduates even are facing unemployment at almost twice the rate of their white peers. So I wanted to hear from your panel how they believe these type of barriers may factor into the overall unemployment crisis and how these screening devices may be used and dictate the availability of the training programs.
All right. Thanks for calling. Peter Goodman.
Well, I think that's a really excellent point. I mean, let's remember that amongst African-American teenagers, the unemployment rate is somewhere around 48% today. I mean, that's Great Depression level. And you know that when you're out of work and you still have to pay bills, you're likely to use credit cards if you have access to them. You're likely to do what it takes to pay for health care if you have a health care crisis, to just keep your car running so you can get around and get job training, to look for work. And so certainly people who are in positions of long-term unemployment are much more vulnerable to the sorts of choices. I mean, they're facing a bunch of lousy choices, choices that lead to bad credit. And now that we've seen employers aggressively using credit checks, there's a woman in my book who was out of work for more than a year. She said, if you told me before that a person could, you know, look for work for a year and not find anything, I'd have thought they were lazy. She was somebody who lost her car, and then she lost her job, and then she lost her house because she couldn't come up with the rent money anymore.
Right,
and when I talked to her, she was about to move into a homeless shelter.
I'm afraid we'll have to leave it at that, Peter. We're just about out of time, but a good incentive for reading your new book, Past Due, The End of Easy Money and the Renewal of the American Economy, Peter Goodman of the New York Times, Robert Lehrman of the Urban Institute, Dante Ginni of the Christian Science Monitor's Patchwork Nation blog, and Justin Lehart of the Wall Street Journal. Thank you all so much. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.